people know Brown versus Board of Education. You all know it, the Supreme Court decision that officially desegregated public schools 60 years ago this week. What people don't often learn is that third grader Linda Brown wanted to go to the school just 7 blocks from her home in Topeka, Kansas, not the one more than a mile away where the black kids had to go. The one near her home was a whites-only school. And all 9 justices voted to end official segregation. All 9, 60 years ago tomorrow. So maybe you didn't know the name Linda Brown. Maybe you didn't know the distances of the schools. Maybe you didn't know this was a unanimous Supreme Court decision. We will talk about Brown and today's new segregation now with the New York State Education Commissioner, John King. He gave an anniversary speech yesterday in which he suggested that the current backlash to the Common Core standards is the new threat to racial equality in education. Commissioner, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for the opportunity to join you.
And you acknowledge in your speech that just 15% of black and Latino students in New York, 15%, graduate from high school ready for college-level work. So before we even get into any Common Core debate, how could an allegedly progressive state like New York, with generations of education reform programs of different kinds now behind us since Brown, still be at that sorry statistic? There must be some fundamental truth that we're overlooking. What might it be?
Well, I think there are a combination of challenges. Certainly, African-American Latino students are disproportionately among our poor students. Certainly, our school system remains segregated not only racially but economically. Students tend to be isolated in schools with other poor students. Oftentimes, we have inequities in funding that affect our students. And fundamentally, instruction in classrooms is not where it needs to be. And that's why we've prioritized the work on the Common Core, because we believe if we point our classrooms towards the right standards that match what students need for college and career success, we can get better outcomes.
Your speech referred to the recent study that New York has the most segregated schools in the country, both racially and economically. And that's largely about housing. Do you have any power as state education commissioner to order real desegregation? Or are there actually no means to that end anymore, with people dividing themselves up into different neighborhoods by income, and you have to focus on getting the best possible education to segregated schools?
We've got to do both, I think. We have some opportunities to increase racial and socioeconomic integration. Certainly, our career and technical education programs that are organized regionally around the state are often places where you see more socioeconomic integration because they're drawing from multiple districts. In some of our large districts, like New York City, there are opportunities to redraw enrollment lines for schools to create greater socioeconomic integration. At the same time, we've got to make sure that every school has high standards and effective teaching. And so we've got to tackle both things.
I actually think that one of the more overlooked aspects of Mayor de Blasio's housing plan is that his goal for developers of mixed income housing, some lower, some middle, some market rate units in the same building, doesn't just address the need for affordable apartments at different levels. It also could create more mixed income communities, which has all these other social benefits like desegregated neighborhood schools. Have you thought about housing reform as a path to 21st century desegregation?
Oh, I think that's exactly right, that the opportunity to have mixed income housing can support the development of mixed income schools. We can also set similar policies at the school level. There are a few schools in the city that are piloting enrollment policies where they set aside a percentage of the seats in the school for students who are low income and a percentage for students who are affluent to create a mixed income school environment. So it's a very similar approach to the one that the mayor's taking on housing.
New York State Education Commissioner John King, our guest on WNYC. And let's get to the heart of your speech yesterday, that there has recently been a troubling backlash to holding ourselves accountable for higher standards, and that backlash will hurt today's Linda Browns. It's backlash against the Common Core standards. How do you see it?
Well, it's very troubling, and the Southern Poverty Law Center just put out a report on the backlash against the Common Core from around the country. A lot of misinformation, claims that the Common Core is being forced on states by Washington, folks who are calling it Obama Core, as though the president wrote the standards himself.
That's the right-wing critique of the federal takeover of education. something.
That's right. And in fact, what the Common Core was educators and higher education faculty coming together from across the country, 45 states, together to define what students need to be prepared for college and career success. It was a bipartisan effort, and it was an effort led by educators.
But you also attack the progressive critics of Common Core. And you said in your speech that too many of the voices attacking Common Core have done so with false narratives about the motives of today's reformers, such as privatization of public schools or enriching testing companies. But you don't think there's a privatization movement that has attached itself to charter schools, for example?
Well, it's important to emphasize that charter schools are public schools, and some of them are doing quite well, getting great academic outcomes for high-need students. We should celebrate that and try to replicate that. Other charters are doing poorly, and we should close them because part of the agreement of the charter law is that you'll perform or you'll lose your charter.
But when you write off the concern about privatization as a false narrative, isn't there an ideological or economically self-interested privatization movement that started by proposing a totally privatized voucher system, and when that didn't work politically, turned to charter schools as a way to privatize from within?
Well, charters have an interesting history. Al Shanker of the AFT was one of the original contributors to the discourse that led to charters. So there is a progressive vision for charters that is about trying to serve the highest need students and create flexibility for teachers and principals and parents. And you see that reflected in the new contract, the new UFT contract with the city, where there'll be the opportunity for innovation schools that in many ways will try to create the same flexibility in the district that charters have.
Why do you think there's so much hedge fund money in this? What's that about? That gets people suspicious that this is about something other than whatever UFT President Albert Shanker might have been for 40 years ago.
Well, I think there's certainly a commitment to philanthropy on the part of folks in the hedge fund community. There's a longstanding commitment to philanthropy in Americans, the American tradition. But I don't think that philanthropy should be viewed negatively. It's a good thing that people want to give money to improve schools. The key thing about the Common Core is it's a set of standards for all of our public schools, to say that all of our public schools should aspire to provide kids with the writing skills, the problem-solving skills, the communication skills they need for success after high school.
You said that to resist high standards for all students is to reject a country based on equality of opportunity 60 years after Brown. So are you saying that opponents of the Common Core approach, which includes some real campaigners for racial justice, are racist?
I'm saying that the notion that there are some kids who just can't be prepared for success after high school is wrong and inconsistent with American values, that we've got to figure out as educators, how do we ensure that in every school students get the preparation they need? And some of the voices that have been critics of the Common Core say things like, well, you know, these standards are too high for kids, or you can't expect poor kids to learn challenging texts. You can't expect poor kids to learn challenging math. We know that's not true. We know there are schools all across the state that are doing a great job providing high-needs kids with the skills they need, and we've got to replicate those practices throughout the state.
I wonder if one problem that you have is that the skeptical public is not focused on the higher standards at the root of Common Core. It's not really Common Core they're critiquing, but that just like with the last decade of education reform, No Child Left Behind, measuring results is built on high stakes and dubious standardized tests. Do you have a problem there of a change that is being experienced as no change in what people are actually upset about?
I do think you're right that people have conflated a critique of standardized testing and the role of standardized testing in schools with the Common Core standards. The standards aren't about testing. They're about instruction. Of course, we need to have assessments to measure students' progress. It's important to have those common benchmarks, but they shouldn't be the focus of teaching.
Let's take a call. Kylie in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Kylie.
Hello. I wanted to just go back to the point about charter schools. And I think that the point to make is whether or not we think that charter schools are a part of education privatization. There's research that shows that charter schools and magnet schools are a part of what allows people to segregate their kids. And so I was wondering if your guest could speak to that. I mean, even, you know, New York City and really across the country, it's clear that charter schools and magnet schools are a way for white and upper middle class and affluent parents to separate, of all races, by the way, but to separate their kids from poor minority students.
Well, certainly in New York, charters disproportionately serve students of color and poor students. But I think one opportunity that we have is to think differently about enrollment policies. One change that we made in the charter law in 2010 was to require charters to set enrollment targets around serving poor students, English language learners, students with disabilities. And what's striking when we've done the analysis school by school of demographics in New York State is that there are neighborhoods where the district schools are incredibly segregated racially and economically. I can think of a neighborhood in Brooklyn where you've got a school that serves largely affluent white students, and not very far away, you've got another school that serves largely poor students, students of color. If we changed our enrollment policies, there's an opportunity to increase integration.
But that study that you mentioned in your speech that finds New York has the most segregated schools in the nation, one of the things they cited was the proliferation of charter schools, to the caller's point. The report noted that charters, because they're generally aimed at serving poor kids, therefore attract families of color into their lotteries, and they wind up quite segregated.
Well, charter, there is a legitimate concern, I think, about school segregation patterns and the relationship to charters. But in New York State, charters serve a very small percentage of students. The bigger challenge that we have is how do we ensure that our enrollment policies in all of our schools promote socioeconomic integration. The other piece that's important to emphasize, many of the charters in New York City have as a mission trying to help high-needs kids get better opportunities. We want schools to have that commitment, and we've got to balance that commitment with our commitment to socioeconomic integration.
My guest, the New York State Education Commissioner, John King, who gave a 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board of Education speech at the Rockefeller Institute yesterday, with the concern that the backlash over Common Core is impeding progress toward the racial equality in education that Brown was supposed to start. Rohana in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Rohana.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
My problem really with the is saying that there's a backlash against Common Core learning standards. I do not feel, at least here in New York, that's what the backlash is against. I think it is really against a very poor Common Core curriculum that was pushed by the DOE on schools and primarily taken by poorer schools, and also against the focus on testing that it has produced. And it's actually, ironically, at least in my experience, I have a third grader and a fifth grader at PSMS 282 in Brooklyn, where we've been very happy for 7 years, that it has actually made the education standards drop, and it's put great pressure on teachers and students to focus on testing. And that's very negative, and it's not about having standards. It's about how you choose to implement the standards and about how you choose to focus on tests rather than classroom learning. And that it's something else is not paying attention to what's happening in the classrooms, in the schools, in an honest way.
Commissioner?
Yeah, I mean, in many ways, I share the caller's concerns. I mean, one of our challenges at the state level, we adopt standards. We have a set of common assessments that we give in the state. We actually give fewer tests today than we did even 5 years ago. But there are lots of local decisions about how to implement standards. Local districts make curriculum choices. Unfortunately for the Common Core nationally, every questionable curriculum choice made in any school is attributed to the standards, when in fact the standards aren't a curriculum. They're a set of common expectations for math and English language arts. There are districts around the state, for sure, that are spending too much time on test prep or giving more local tests than are needed. We should have the minimum number of assessments we need to inform good decision-making at the classroom level and the school level.
So last question in our last minute, how happy are you with Mayor de Blasio and the direction he's taking with Common Core so far, and how different is it compared to Mayor Bloomberg's?
Well, you know, I think it's early, but I've been pleased that Chancellor Farina has expressed a strong commitment to not only the Common Core, but the professional development for teachers that will help to ensure its success. And I'm looking forward to working with her and with the mayor to advance that effort over the next few years.
What's the biggest thing to do on your part? Because I hear your concern that there's a backlash that you think is misplaced that's going to wind up hurting poor and minority kids. What's the biggest thing that you need to do as state education commissioner on a policy level in addition to criticize the critics?
Well, I think the key thing is we've got to continue to work to support really good professional development. Actually, we've got 1,000 educators from all across the state in Albany this week doing professional development around the Common Core. A lot of excitement about what they're seeing in classrooms and an opportunity for them to go back and help their colleagues continue to improve their instruction. We've got to highlight examples of great practice, try to help people replicate those.
New York State Education Commissioner John King, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.